Tony Cirma and Bill Wagner. Bill, Tony, how are you?
Doing great, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Doing good.
You guys are involved in something called the Humanitarian Toolbox. What is the Humanitarian Toolbox?
So I'll start and then certainly jump in. The Humanitarian Toolbox is an external initiative, its own nonprofit, so a charity. And what it's really focused around is how do we get software as solutions, technology that can be used by response organizations? That's everything from somebody as big as the United Nations, FEMA, et cetera, down to Save the Children, World Vision, and to local branches of the Red Cross, et cetera, et cetera. And just like every other industry, their life's been affected by technologies and how they respond. But like most companies and certainly most charities, they don't have all the resources, all the humans, all the money in the world to do everything on their own. So they look for a lot of opportunities of how can they reuse or find value in something else that someone built. And what we saw historically is a lot of hackathons were being done, and hackathons are a wonderful, great thing. But solutions tend to get developed. There's a big amount of energy, say Saturday and Sunday. Mm-hmm. Sunday goes by, people's lives come back. And those solutions don't get maintained, they aren't updated, and they aren't maybe ready to deploy when an actual disaster happens.
Sure. So the same thing at give camps sometimes.
Exactly. And so give camps are a unique way of solving it because they're usually focused on a local charity, one small charity. What we're trying to do is take that volunteerism that exists from hackathons and apply that to the whole industry of response.
Response to natural disasters.
To natural disasters. So recent examples include the Yolanda or Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines. Right now we've got the Balkan flooding that's happened. There's fires down in California. I mean, this is just right now. There's always some type of natural disaster going on anywhere, right? Just ignore that. I thought I had my phone on mute. Apparently I thought I had phone on mute. Anyways, so any kind of natural disaster and how you drive the response to that. And so what we're trying to do is take hackathons, find a way for that volunteerism to be kind of brought up and put in a traditional software development process. So what we mean by that is have people who are at hackathons, have people who are contributing on our GitHub repositories or what have you over time, have that be part of an overall process. So the solution actually gets developed, gets deployed, and gets maintained, and then we can continue to do more and more of that over time. And I'm sure you'd like to add some stuff.
You know, and from the other side, a lot of the organizations that we work with, even the larger ones, they're not leveraging technology the way, you know, those of us in the technology industry see everyone doing it because they're our customers and people we work with.
Because that's not their core competency.
That's not right. Their core competency is focus on the immediate needs after a disaster, right? And, you know, food and water and medical care are much more important than, you know, and much more urgent than let's leverage new technology to be more efficient. And by trying to get a sustainable effort between disasters and when people aren't in the field and so focused on the person needing help right in front of them, what we're trying to do is okay, so what are the needs, what's there, so that we anticipate the kinds of software that are going to make them more effective and have that ready to go before a disaster happens.
So you guys are scoping out a number of projects that are going to be used by these response organizations, correct?
Right. So right now, we're actively working on three different projects, and we're going to start scaling that up a little bit and getting more teams working just on those three. And our current backlog of requests from different organizations is at about 75 right now. So there's a lot of unmet need out there that we want to scale up and be able to try and meet in the coming year or two.
Wow. Yeah. What are the three you're working on right now?
So the three we've got going right now, the one that's furthest along is crisis check-in. And that's the idea of right now you have many, many volunteers who either will show up or want to show up at a disaster, but you have to coordinate who are they, what organization are they from, when are they going to be here. A lot of that work in a lot of situations is literally done on a marker board or a big piece of paper.
Sure.
And you can't check into a piece of paper 3 days before you get there. Mm. You can't, you know, edit and change it. You can't have an administrator look at that who isn't sitting in the room. So there's a lot of natural capabilities that come with technology, but then it also increases the ability to find not only the volunteers are going to come somewhere in person, but also those that are going to be virtual volunteers who might be helping doing some type of data analysis or support and don't have to physically be at the epicenter or, you know, the center of the disaster response. So that's crisis check, and that's one. Another one is the mobile-based emergency training. So think again, this is volunteer workforces. And so I may not have gone to a disaster in my region for 6 months, 9 months, who knows. and I might not know what the latest walkie-talkie standards are, or you know, what's the right way I'm supposed to use our new system for logging needs from individuals, et cetera, et cetera. So the ability to have those training videos, almost a curriculum that's sent to me to say, hey, you're coming to this disaster to do this role. Here's what you need to be trained up on. And I can do that again with a mobile device before I get there. And then the third one escapes me.
The third one is the link toolbar. And the third one, so what happens there is, you know, we've seen this even with our own lives when we're trying to track something or we're interested in something. After a natural disaster, there is a whole lot of information that goes out on the web. And some of it's better than others. And as Tony mentioned, in a lot of situations, you're going to have a whole lot of virtual volunteers. And a lot of what they're trying to do is gather that information, get it to the right people, get it to the people that are, you know, maybe looking for loved ones, maybe trying to figure out exactly, you know, what areas are the hardest hit and so on. Mm-hmm. And what this link system does, and its name is probably going to change because it was originally a toolbar that ran in the browser. And we're re-implementing so it runs not as a toolbar so that modern platforms and tablets can use it.
Okay. And plus the word link is overused in products.
Right. Well, here, yeah. So here it is actually meant to be links to the right information. And the idea behind it is now people who are really in the know and know, okay, this is the accurate flood map you want for Bosnia and that flood. This is the accurate information on where there are fires in California. They can be editing this resource in real time, and it gets pushed out to all the volunteers. So they're getting the best information rather than doing a search, you know, on whatever search engine it is and getting the most popular information. So that's one bit that's really important on that one. And then one thing to add on the mobile emergency training, one reason why this needs to be an application that gets maintained and upgraded and configured correctly is some things like medical care, what's the right procedure depends on the locale. Like one interesting example is for heart attack victims, the amount of nitroglycerin you give changes based on altitude.
I see.
And if you're always working, say, near sea level or something like that, and now suddenly you're doing something in the mountains, you know, you'll be doing it wrong based on your own training unless you get updated based on where you're going now. So one of the things that we can do with that application is instead of just saying, you know, here's the training, here's what you got to do, it's here's what you have to do for this situation. So we can try to bring that a little bit closer to be the right information for people.
Good. Yeah. All right, now, the three applications you're working on now, are any of them in production? Are they being used at disaster sites yet, or are you still not at that point yet?
Right, we're not at that point yet. And one of the things, one of the goals for this summer is to get crisis check-in or possibly the mobile emergency training as well in one of the staged exercises.
Okay.
And I'll let you speak more about that because I think you've been on some of those.
Yeah, the idea there is as you can imagine, most natural disaster response is not a predictable event, or at least hopefully it's not unless you have a weather machine and you're doing something evil. And so there are a number of different organizations at different levels that will have staged regular exercises so they can try new technologies, sort of break them, see what works, see what doesn't work. Mm. We were involved in one of those recently in Luxembourg for the working group on emergency technology, and they were testing out drones, they were testing out 3D printers. And so one of the next exercises, we want to get one of the two applications into there so we can see how that works and verify where that last mile of bugs is that we don't know about that stops it from being ready to go.
Great. And how long have you been developing this? How long has the Humanitarian Toolbox been around?
So we started two Septembers ago, so just about a year and a half ago now.
Okay.
It was on the first, well, not the first, but the .NET Rocks road trip for 2012. Mm-hmm. We announced it in Chicago. And we, at that point, really it was a concept, right? We hadn't really even had a website at that point. And from there we grew. We had a number of events at a number of conferences where we started on crisis check-in and then the mobile emergency training. And we kept moving the project a little bit farther, a little bit farther. And now we're at the point, which is really, really interesting, where I think every day there's an email that comes from our GitHub repository for crisis check-in that somebody's closed an issue, submitted a pull request, done that. So it's not just the physical events, but it's also the work that's being done virtually over time that continues to move these forward. Another thing we learned, which I hadn't known a lot about, is just like there's software and coders out there at conferences, there's testers and QAs at conferences. Sure. So we've had test-a-thons where people go in, do a lot of great testing, find a lot of problems in what we built, and you know, find ways to make it better, faster, stronger, and then we can guide the virtual developers that show up at a repository to say, not only to get sort of a blank slate and it's hard to start, but you know, here's a couple of bugs. Go in, install the thing, fix this bug. It's a quick, easy way to get in, engaged. And it also fits in our model of we want developers, we want testers, UX people, because it's really that whole life cycle.
Okay. So you're organizing events in different cities where people can get together and write code. Kind of, I'm familiar with the GiveCamp concept, so I can relate to this. And where are those, and where do we find out about them, and how many have there been? What's the format of that?
So I'll start with that and then certainly add. We're going to list them up on our Humanitarian Toolbox website, which is htbox.org. It used to be Humanitarian Toolbox, but it turns out no one can spell that, so including me. But we're going to list them up there. We're right now working on what our list is going forward. I don't think we've published it quite just yet that we've landed on it. And the one we know for sure is that conference in August in Wisconsin Dells. Mm-hmm. So we know we'll be there for sure and working on the rest of them. But what we're doing is really
The conference or right before?
Right before.
So you show up a day early or 2 days early?
2 days early.
Saturday and Sunday,
then
I believe.
Bring your laptop. You can actually write some code and contribute to this project. Okay.
Yep. So we'll be there, and we'll do similar things at other conferences. We're also looking at working with local user groups and having them almost sort of sponsor or take on part of a project and carry it forward as another way of getting people engaged. Hmm. We want to scale this, and Bill will talk a little bit more about that. Hmm. And then the other thing we're looking at, too, is just how do we keep it going, almost sort of virtual hackathons or sprint challenges over a month or a week or something where we get people, regardless of where they are, around maybe the same time of day or time of month to work on a project together. Mm-hmm. So we don't always have to just have a physical location.
You know, and that's a lot of what the last year and so was about, was learning what works to get people engaged and get people to stay engaged. You know, and we tried doing things at different conferences, and, you know, sometimes you run into the issue where, you know, I want to see my favorite speaker down the hall, so I'm not here, and so on. And both that conference and CodeMash, weather hurt us this year, CodeMash, but we can do events before the conference and get a lot of involvement there. So we're not competing against the speakers you're coming to learn from. So that's helped us. And as Tony said, you know, what we're really trying to do is figure out a good way and the right way to really get people to stay engaged between in-person events, because that's the way we're going to really be able to scale this and get things done. And we're going to be working on everything from the Scrum challenges, getting, you know, teams to take on something, get a user group to say, you know, we're going to spend the next 6 months, you know, getting together before our meetings and planning out what we're going to get done for the next month in our spare time or however we want to do it. And let different organizations, you know, different developer and other technology organizations drive however they can help. You know, and things like Tony said, you know, we've had fantastic luck with these group of professional testers that are like, yeah, we'll break this and spend hours breaking it.
Okay, so it's a little more organized than, say, an open source project where I could just do a pull request, make my changes.
Well, you can do that.
I can do that, and then you'll look at it and say, well, this is a good change, let's merge it.
And again, there, what we'd ask if anybody wants to do that is look at the open issues. Mm-hmm. We have both bugs listed there, features listed there. We've tagged the issues with jump in is the tag we've used that said, you know, this is a good one to jump in. You may not need to know the entire code base before you fix this one thing. So it's a good thing to start with if it's one you're looking at. You know, if you want a bigger one, you know, go ahead, bite off a bigger one, assign it to yourself, and, you know, one of us will contact you and say, so you're working on this. Do you want any help? Do you want any guidance on what we've figured out so far? You know, how will that work? And, yeah, absolutely. Send us a pull request, and, you know, if it's as long as it's looking at some of the issues that we have there, because we are in touch with the NGOs about this is the direction they want this to go in.
That's the non-government agencies.
Right, sorry.
Organizations.
Non-government organizations. So any of the charities Tony mentioned earlier that we work with that are the relief organizations, as long as it's consistent with the features they're saying they need next, yeah, absolutely, we'll take it. You know, we'll review the code and we'll ask you for questions and on we go.
That's all on GitHub, is that right?
Right now, yes. We're probably going to end up with projects on both GitHub and CodePlex.
Okay.
Again, if you go to htbox.org, you will find the links to the repositories, and there you go.
Mm. And one little point about that is we've had success both at events as well as people working over time being both on GitHub as well as using TFS, because there's a lot of folks, possibly, you know, watchers, listeners of this, that don't use Git, haven't already contributed to an open source project, and we don't want to raise the barrier to get involved in one of our projects. We want to put it in a solution where that's something you're already familiar with. We've worked with the TFS Git Bridge, so that way people can work on either side of that. And it's all really kind of just trying to tap the widest market of developers who want to take some of their time, want to volunteer for something that's going to do some good, get a public way of showing their coding skills as well, right? Like an open source project, but not just do it for something that's another piece of technology. Do it for something that's actually going to get deployed, affects sort of lives during a disaster. Mm-hmm. And when we do deploy these, since we have the tracking back through issues and commits and stuff, we can go back and say, you know, remember 12 months ago you were at that conference and you contributed? We just deployed this in support of, you know, Hurricane David or whatever. And now we can give you that tie back so that one of the other points of feedback we found looking at the hackathons was people also started to wonder what was the value of their time spent there. Do they know if it carries forward, et cetera? So we want to close that loop.
Great. Can you talk a little about the technology involved in here? I know you work for Microsoft, Tony, and Bill's a regional director for Microsoft. Is it all .NET stack, or are there other technologies involved?
Oh, you hand me the microphone. Sure, I'll start. A lot of it is on the .NET stack, and a lot of that is because we do get some great support. You know, we are able to host the apps in Azure. We've got some great support from that team that lets us do that.
Okay.
You know, but as we all know now, it's a multi-device world. So we are leveraging things like HTML, HTML5 for different web applications that will run, you know, crisis check-in will run on anything that's got a browser.
Okay.
And we're working on, and we'd love to get more help on this, is that we're writing mobile apps using the Xamarin Toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have versions of the crisis check-in app that run on the iOS devices, the Android devices, as well as the Windows mobile devices, the Windows Phone and the Windows 8 tablets. And that, I think, is going to be a big key, is that we can be everywhere that these really organizations are. And remember, they're volunteers too, right? They're not going to have, you know, for an app like crisis check-in to be useful, it has to be available on every device the volunteers bring.
Is there any skill set that you're looking for that you're having trouble finding?
So that's a good question. I think what it is I think we're really looking more at a scale of resources. That's part of why we focused on .NET and Xamarin with the reuse of C# and .NET and stuff, because there's a lot of folks there. So it's more looking at the scale of that. We've tapped into the QAs and the testers, and that's been great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next thing we're really looking at, and this is one of the areas I focus on, is the UX and the user experience and the designer side of things. Because as you can imagine, the use case for using this is, I've got an application, I'm using it in the middle of a disaster, I'm not going to be worrying about buttons in Chrome, and I want a very simple UX.
Simple, easy to understand.
Yeah, elegant, you know, intuitive. Yeah, something that I'm not used to using, and that's something where UX designers and such can help us. We've had a few folks that are really just HTML and CSS focused, and so we're looking for more of them to get involved so we can go from sort of developer pretty applications to really truly usable applications.
Right. All right. So I actually had Richard Campbell on this show 2 Septembers ago, right? It must have been the night after you launched it, because it was in Detroit during their .NET Rocks show.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, there was no real call for action. There was nothing to, you know, just stay tuned was the message. What's the call for action here? People watching this today, that sounds awesome. I want to get involved. What's your next step?
Yeah, so if you want to get involved, the best and first thing to do is go to htbox.org, as we mentioned. So up there, we'll explain what we are, what some of the projects are that we have. There's links to our GitHub repo so you can see publicly what's going on, some of the information to sign up for our newsletter so that we can let you know when we have events and projects. But if you want to jump in and actually work on some code, go look at those repos up on GitHub, find what's an issue, or even just reach out and contact us and say, I have this skill set, I want to help. Where's the best place I can add value? And we guarantee at this point we've got so much work and so much demand that we will find a place. The other call to action I'd say is that if you're somebody who would like to be one of the project leads, and our goals are not to have a single project lead for a single project, because obviously people have day jobs and lives and stuff that can slow down. But we're looking for a number of folks who also want to kind of shepherd a project, think about the issues, help arrange events and stuff. So if you're also interested in being a project lead, definitely reach out to us or Richard Campbell.
That's actually one of the huge ones right now.
How do we get hold of you guys?
Okay, so each of us, well, any of us have htbox.org emails.
Okay.
So tony.surma@htbox.org, bill.wagner@htbox.org. You know, we'll answer those immediately. And as Tony said, if you go to htbox.org, you can sign up for the newsletter. It's once a month. And then you get to hear about new things that are going on and new things that where we'll need help. And that would be a great way to contribute.
And then also the organization's on Twitter as well, so you can reach out to us there. It's just htbox.
Okay.
Is our handle, and as well as you've got Bill Wagner and Tony Surma, trying to keep it simple.
Yep.
But so any of those communication means are a great way to get a hold of us, and we've talked to and met a lot of people that way and found them to help start to jumpstart a project with us, or just, go grab an issue and do a pull request.
Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else?
think that's mostly it. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about Humanitarian Toolbox and hopefully get more people involved, because we definitely see this as a high-value thing. They can learn new skills, play with new technology, get a public record, and we can actually do some good with technology for people who are affected by natural disasters.
Right. And that's kind of what we're doing is, you know, it's a lot of technology, a lot of friends, and doing something that's good.
I like the way you said that.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks.
A lot of technology, a lot of friends, and doing something that's good.